Trained mental health professionals are responding to crisis situation alongside law enforcement or in place of them. We'll talk about it with a county sheriff and a crisis counselor on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Elite Casino Resorts is rooted in Iowa. Elite's 1,600 employees are our company's greatest asset. A family-run business, Elite supports volunteerism, encourages promotions from within, and shares profits with our employees.
Across Iowa, hundreds of neighborhood banks strive to serve their communities, provide jobs, and help local businesses. Iowa banks are proud to back the life you build. Learn more at iowabankers.com.
For decades, Iowa Press has brought you political leaders and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond, celebrating 50 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa PBS. Here is Kay Henderson.
A few weeks ago, if you watched this program, you saw two people at this table who had personal experience with Iowa's mental health system and have become advocates for change. Today, we are interviewing two people who come to this issue from a different perspective, from the law enforcement perspective and how they respond to mental health issues in their communities. Our guests today are Sheriff Tony Thompson. He is the Black Hawk County Sheriff and author of the book, Any Place But Here, The Uncomfortable Convergence Between Mental Illness and the Criminal Justice System. Also joining us today is Rich Nesmith. He is the Mental Health Liaison with the Linn County Sheriff's Office and a counselor with Foundation to Crisis Services in Cedar Rapids. Gentlemen, thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Also joining our conversation are Stephen Gruber-Miller of the Des Moines Register and Aaron Murphy of the Gazette in Cedar Rapids.
So, gentlemen, we wanted to start by just kind of getting an understanding of how and why you both got involved in this particular topic and why it's important to you. Rich, we'll start with you. Why do you do what you do?
Well, I'm retired military, and when I retired, I realized really quickly I needed something to do. So I started volunteering to help folks and kind of get me an opportunity to work with underadvantaged people. And I wound up meeting somebody from Foundation 2. I fell in love with the company and what they do and how they interact with people. And that led to me becoming a mobile crisis counselor. And that led to me becoming the liaison with the Linn County Sheriff's Office that I am now. So,
yeah. And tell us just a little bit about, did you have any background in this?
Yes, in a very unconventional way. I am retired military. I spent 25 years as a military pilot. I did get a master's degree in counseling when I was in the military, and that was to help with some of the issues we were having at the Air Force Academy at the time. And so it was a requirement, and I didn't know I was going to like it. It was a serendipitous thing, and I fell in love with it. So I'm a counselor that came from the military, which is a little bit unusual.
And Tony, as sheriff, tell folks how you came to be so active, and I've interviewed you over many years on this topic. Why has this been so important to you?
You know, I write about it, but had you told me when I first took office in 2009 how pervasive this intersection between mental illness and law enforcement was, I would have laughed about it. But truth be told, the unfortunate reality is at the very bottom of that mental health delivery funnel is law enforcement. We are the catchers of all of those that don't fit anywhere else. And it's unfortunate. It's not where we ought to be. It's not where we want to be. But the frustration spills over, and suddenly you're writing a book about it just to let off steam, you know, to let that frustration out. It's every county jail in the state is brimming with mentally ill.
And you have, and it's always stuck with me. You have described county jails as
they are the largest mental health care facilities in the state, and it's not. it's not by design, it's not by desire, it's not even, you know, this braggadocious type statement. It's the reality that we face.
Yeah, so walk us through. What does the county jail look like? How are you, you know, attempting to even treat people who are in that jail right now? What do you do to make sure that these people are able to get help that they need?
Well, unfortunately, we all know that a county jail is not designed for mental illness, mental health treatment. That's not what we're meant to do. It's not what Chapter 50 of the Iowa Code tells us we're supposed to be doing. In my jail specifically, I've got 272 residential beds. About 60% of them are occupied by people that are diagnosed mentally ill. That's a frustration in and of itself. Overall, crime in Iowa, crime in Blackhawk County is dropping, but violent crime is up. So when you think about the people that we're holding, 60% of them are mentally ill. Most of them are in jail for forcible felonies. So their heads stay in our beds for much longer periods of time. So that requires us to kind of mold our treatment, mold our care plan a little differently than we ever have before. We've got a full-time psychiatric nurse practitioner on staff 40 hours a week. I've now got two master's level social workers that work in our facility. One with the Department of Corrections, I pay her salary, but her whole full-time job is to try and divert post-arrest people that don't really belong in that facility back out onto the street, back out into community-based placement. The other one, she works group sessions. She works with other coordinated care and community-oriented service organizations to try and provide services to those folks that we can get released out of our facilities so they don't recidivate and come back. So it's a perplexing, when you talk about law enforcement, what a weird position for the sheriff, for a jail, for a correctional facility to have to accommodate because there is this enormous gap that we're trying to fill that really doesn't fit our job description whatsoever.
And Rich, walk us through what you do. You actually dispatch and respond to some of these mental health calls with law enforcement. So talk us through what kind of work is entailed when you do that.
Sure.
And what these calls are like.
That's absolutely true. I dispatch with deputies. The dispatchers that dispatch deputies also control me. And so when I show up. When I show up on a scene, If I'm first there, I don't go up. I wait for a deputy to come with me. Obviously, our first goal is to make safe. The second thing that I'm looking to do is to try to de-escalate the situation, okay? And deputies do this as well. So third thing I do is I offer services as needed at the time, whether those be acute services or long-term services. But I want you to understand that I am a tool for the sheriff. Okay, I that's what my job is to be there for him when he needs me. So if anything falls into that gray area that is like, okay, this person doesn't need to go to the hospital, this person doesn't need to go to jail, there's not a criminal activity taking place, what do we do? That's when I become a very useful tool and I'm thrown into that call.
Okay, so you said a couple of things I want to follow up
sure.
on. So the sheriff's deputy is actually the first point of contact with the person, or are you?
Yeah, well, on a dispatched call, the deputy will always be the first one to make contact with a client. I do go out with clients without a deputy, but they're clients that I've been out on before, or they're clients that I'm called out from another source other than Linn County Sheriff. For example, if Foundation 2 has me go out with a client, or if County Services Building has me go out with a client. I also support other organizations in Cedar Rapids that sometimes go out and want a little bit of assistance with de-escalation, and I'll go with them.
Okay. And you mentioned acute services and long-term services. Mm-hmm. What kinds of things are you talking about when you use those terms?
When we have, acute being a short-term service, if we need to get someone stabilized for a couple of days, med management, or somebody to talk to work through a crisis like a death of a family member, and they don't feel like they can do that alone. We have places like the Access Center in Linn County, where we have crisis stabilization beds, and we have counselors available for them to talk to. We use Foundation 2 mobile crisis outreach services that provides people to come out to your home and provide 24/7 counseling care that you need. That's a short-term acute thing. That's something, if we're dealing with an acute crisis, we can solve it that way. That's great. Longer-term care is working with other providers in the area and providing referrals to something like a substance abuse treatment or, you know, in-residence treatment for a longer-term stay for somebody that's suffering from a schizophrenia, for example, or something that is going to be with them the rest of their lives.
Tony, how many Ricks do you have at the Black Hawk County Sheriff's Office?
Well, I think it's important to recognize we've really talked about two different models here, right? We've talked about the post-arrest diversion that happens in my jail, and we talked about pre-arrest diversion. And obviously, we want pre-arrest. That model is anytime we can keep them out of jail, that's critical. And your question is right on the money. There are 99 counties in the state of Iowa. How many have programs like a Rich? We have a model that's a little bit different in that we've got the Waterloo Police Department has a Rich. We do not. I've got a deputy that's also a social worker that rides with a canine that is a de-escalation crisis intervention canine. So when we've got somebody that's suicidal, actively looking to, you know, cause harm, the dog will go in with my social working deputy and try to talk them down, convince them to come with us and seek help and hospitalization, those sorts of things. So we approach the same sort of situation from a slightly different angle. But we have those same resources. But it cautioned me as I was listening to Rich talk about access centers and substance abuse, you know, detox centers and things like that. We're talking about a state with 99 counties, and most of these counties, maybe the best they have is telehealth, telepsych. And it is frustrating when you start talking about pre-arrest diversion, which is the goal, right? Keep them out of the county jail. 60% of my population is mentally ill, and a lot of these counties don't have those kind of resources available to them.
Has there been a sea change among law enforcement and people who work in the law enforcement community like you do about the value of this? Has there been a change?
Absolutely.
I think so.
In attitudes?
Yeah.
There's no doubt. It's, you know, anytime you're new going into a program and trying to sell a program, there's always a little bit of reservation. But when even the most hardened people see the results, they buy in really quick. There's no doubt that these programs work, and there's no doubt that they see the value in it. So I've had fantastic support from the Linn County Sheriff's Office. And like I said, they're proven to work. They do work, and we are growing. We have LELs, we call ourselves law enforcement liaisons. We have them in Delaware County. We're putting one in Dubuque County. We have them in Dubuque City. We have them in Cedar Rapids. There's one in Marion. There's one in Hiawatha. You know, it's growing, and it's going to get bigger. There's going to be a time when this is a common thing. It's going to be that way.
We're even investing it from the administrative level. We're investing in just crisis intervention training, the tools on how to talk better, how to utilize the verbalization skills, how to relate, how to empathize, how to, you know, use those skills. And the first thing you'll hear is, oh, that's a hug-a-thug program. And I thought, oh my goodness, you know, it just maddened me when I was hearing cops say that, because we build that muscle memory, right? We rely on, we know how to index the gun, we know how to do all those things, and so we're resistant to change because those are the things that keep us safe and get us coming home, you know, safe every night. So the paradigm shift is hard, but everybody's seeing the reality, the proof of what Rich is talking about, the proof of how talking better, how utilizing those verbalization skills, all those tools we're starting to put in the tool bag is creating a better outcome. And so we're shifting that paradigm much quicker.
Absolutely. And like I said,
sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. We've got a number of topics we want to get to. So just to keep the conversation moving. But real quick, before we do move on, I want to ask, so you talk about the paradigm shift and the attitudes. You're in Linn County, you're in Blackhawk County, two of the bigger counties. Is there also a resource question? Are smaller counties able to have positions like you all have if they would like?
There's certainly options out there. You know, I would encourage these smaller counties to talk to the representatives and foundation too, because they work grants for a lot of this to help out with getting started. But I also do a lot of training for the smaller departments. We provide CIT training. I'll teach de-escalation training, and we can kind of introduce these programs in a non-invasive way at first to for them to see the value in it. And again, when they see the results are almost instantaneous. It's very quick to see, yes, this is worth it. We are reducing recidivism. You know, there are fewer 911 calls. There are fewer emergency room visits. Yes, this is a cheaper and more effective option than what we're doing now.
We're curious, wanted to get your perspective, and Sheriff Thompson, I'll start with you on this one. The state legislature recently approved a redesign and sort of a combining of the state's mental health and substance abuse delivery systems. They had been independent of each other. This was a proposal from Governor Reynolds. We expect that she'll sign that into law. How much will that be helpful? Does that address some of the issues that you all have been describing?
We all hold our breath, right? Because I think the devil's in the details of a lot of that. That merger between substance abuse and mental illness, those are both really big bullies in the state, right? So when you put those two together, you want to make sure that they're both going to get the attention that they deserve. Taking it out of health and putting it in HHS, that makes me nervous. I want to make sure that they are going to get the attention and the funding that they deserve and that they need. I know taking 13 regions down to 7 districts is nerve-wracking. We all know that the best ideas come out of Des Moines, right? We were the largest mental health region in the state with 22 counties. And just through recognizing that 22 counties was too big, we kind of self-attrited. It was untenable down to, I think we're at 13 counties now. And so we've already kind of learned a lesson that putting a whole bunch of counties under one region didn't work. My fear is the state may have to learn that the hard way. We may put ourselves back a couple of years and have the state learn the hard lesson that 7 regions may be untenable too. So there's a little trepidation. We're holding our breath. We want to make sure that the funding is there for both big bullies on the block and that the proper attention is given. So we're hoping.
Rich, you have any thoughts on the proposed?
I'm not really in the proposal, but what I will say is that I am thrilled to death that legislators are still looking at mental health and it's still on their plate.
Amen.
And so if they're seeing this and they're doing something, I'm a fan.
Yeah, and the state's got, you know, also a system sort of set up or at least a framework for children's mental health. How do you both interact with that system and how does it work with what you do to maybe keep kids out of jail?
Right.
So for me, I know that the sooner and the earlier we can detect, right, the better outcomes we're going to have. So I just spoke to a group of budding school psychologists at UNI and praised them for getting into that career field, encouraged them, right? Because the more we can encourage earlier detection, earlier engagement, the better off we're going to have, better outcomes we're going to have, the less likely they are going to fall through the cracks, the less likely they are going to go untreated. Now, things like schizophrenia, where the onset is a little later in life and harder to detect and you know, more challenging of outcomes, that's always going to be there, that's always going to exist. But anytime that we can make that earlier investment and demonstrate both to Iowans with affliction or Iowans with mental illness that the state is aware, we're going to champion that all day long.
Rich?
Sheriff Thompson talks about how the jails have become the de facto mental health providers for adults. Well, the schools have kind of faced a little bit of the same thing for children. And so Foundation 2 has programs that, you know, that deal specifically with this, where they partnership with the Grantwood AEA to where they have counselors that are available in schools. And so there's this big push and effort to provide these vital services early on so that we do identify these things, and we can provide services so that it doesn't become a problem that they wind up being Sheriff Thompson's issue. And so that's any endeavor that we do to solve these issues before they become real problems is great. And that's what Foundation 2 is doing through a lot of these JFAS programs and partnerships with other organizations. So big proponent of it. We have SROs, okay, that are school resource officers that go out to the schools as well. So again, this is a sheriff and mental health team. The SRO is trained in mental health stuff and CIT trained, and they solve those problems. So it's a wonderful setup. So.
A couple of weeks ago, we had a couple of guests here involved in mental health issues, and they recommended that someone, perhaps in a home, has a family member having a crisis. Don't call 911, call 988, and then they will route it correctly. Is that what law enforcement recommends?
So my biggest fear, and quite frankly, we've been doing a lot of testing in the Blackhawk County Dispatch Center with 988, that smooth transition between the two, mm-hmm. right? If we get the call first and it doesn't rise to the level of needing, you know, somebody's agoraphobic, and so it really doesn't require a law enforcement response or whatever the case may be. So transitioning back and forth, or something escalates to the point where now we do need law enforcement to respond. I'm always cautious because you want to make sure, just like Rich was talking about, if it's a dispatched call, making sure the scene is safe. I really think that that's a judgment call. So you had Leslie Carpenter on, right? Mm-hmm. Big fan of Leslie, love her to death. She and I are on the NAMI board together for the state. And so we want to advocate 988. We want people to know that that number exists. And I think if you are engaged, involved in the situation, you need to kind of vet that out. If it's dangerous, dangerousness means a 911 call. If it's one of those things where you just know you need an advocate, you need somebody that's going to help you out and provide resources and outlets and avenues for, 988 is the solution. Does that make sense?
It does.
Rich, I'm curious your perspective. There's been a sort of shift in the approach to addressing mental health and where to put people who have mental health needs, and a shift away from institutionalization towards community-based care. And we've seen the closure of institutions in this state because of that. But we also still hear on the other side of that, there's a need for those people with the most critical needs and beds and wherever that may be. Yeah. How do we thread that needle, and what's your thoughts on, you know, what the how we should be approaching?
We've gotten pretty good at identifying at the point of crisis, folks that need help. So we're pretty good at responding. We're becoming very good with the onset of access centers and care facilities for acute care. Where it kind of drops off a little bit is bed space for long-term residents. There is going to be, you know, 20%, I believe you said in your book, sir, that need long-term care, and the number of beds that we've had available for that has dropped. So if I need somebody in a long-term substance abuse treatment program, it's much harder to find that than it is something that is acute. So we've gotten really good at identifying, really good at that acute care, and it falls off a little bit that. You know, I would like to add a thing that, you know, something that is needed is some sort of case management to help people through all of these programs. You know, a lot of the folks that need this care have trouble dealing with the bureaucracies, the paperwork, and even knowing that these things exist. You know, I think the real benefit and the real efficiency is going to come when we have people that help people manage these folks through this program. So that hopefully that answers your question.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Sheriff Thompson, we just have a couple of minutes left. I want to stray briefly away from mental health to talk about another law enforcement question. The state has a new law making it a state crime for immigrants to illegally reenter the country. You said to a crowd this week you wouldn't be enforcing that law. Why?
Because it's unenforceable. We don't have the resources to be able to enforce that law. We don't have anything that will tell us at face level, I stop you, pull you over, run your name, nothing's going to tell me you've been deported. There's no access to the information that's going to allow me to do that. Now, I saw that Governor Reynolds said, we will write another law. We will work with Stephen Bayens to get access to that. Stephen Bannes doesn't have access to that information. That's where the federal government has access to that information. So I really think that that was a political law that was made to make them feel good about writing it. Great. And I get it. Being deported, they shouldn't be back here. We would love to enforce it, but it's unenforceable as written.
Rich, I want to circle back to the premise of the show. If you had a magic wand, what would be the one thing that you would do, and about 45 seconds to answer okay. this, to fix the system?
Ooh, ooh, that's a tough one. I'll tell you what it is. Again, the navigation of this system for somebody in a mental health crisis is very daunting. Okay. If I had magic wand and unlimited resources, I would have case managers that were professionals at this, that understood what the resources were, understood how to navigate it, assisting these clients through the initial crisis, acute care, long-term care, and reentry back into society to where they're, you know, they feel like they've got a job, they feel like they've got something. You know, coming out of the jail, you got somebody that's there for 6 months, he's got no place to stay, they've got no money, and they're standing on the front steps. You need somebody to catch that person, get them back into society so they don't recidivate. They don't come back to jail.
Right. So.
Gentlemen, appreciate you being here today and talking about a very serious issue.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you for having me.
You can watch every episode of Iowa Press at iowapbs.org. For everyone here at Iowa PBS, thanks for watching.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Elite Casino Resorts is a family-run business rooted in Iowa. We believe our employees are part of our family, and we strive to improve their quality of life and the quality of lives within the communities we serve.
Across Iowa, hundreds of neighborhood banks strive to serve their communities, provide jobs, and help local businesses. Iowa banks are proud to back the life you build. Learn more at iowabankers.com.